When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ahsoka Episode 5, Shadow Warrior, is over, but we are just getting started here on Post-Show Recaps. Hello, Snips, and hello there, even though his name is invoked many times. He is not seen in Obi-Wan Kenobi, but man, is his Padawan in the form of Anakin Skywalker making a return appearance in the life of one Ahsoka Tano as we take a walk down memory lane and run a walk down a memory battlefield, I suppose, interminable amounts of times as Ahsoka explores the world between worlds before taking off to another world, perhaps. And in an episode that asked us to either choose to live or die, I think we were quite living for everything that happened on our screens over the course of Shadow Warrior. Of course, I am not alone here. I am joined by a motley crew ready to face down any sort of New Republic bureaucracy that comes our way. Of course, first of all, the great DM Philly. Rich, how are you?
I am so good, Mike. I'm very excited to be back talking Ahsoka with you this week.
All right, Fitzy, welcome back for you. It's been a hot second. You were jumping in, much like the Purrgil, appearing in episode 3 and now episode 5. Are you ready to take us to parts unknown?
Mike, I've got a good feeling about this. I'm really happy to be back. Yeah.
Have you been listening to the waves for the past 2 weeks?
Absolutely, I have. I mean, I was being a regular Jason Solo last week, sitting on the shore, just listening to other people in my mind palace. And there were maybe some lightsabers. Let's not talk about it.
Did you trip up and say Jason Solo, just thinking that, of course, he's a Jedi. Solo. He has to be related to Solo.
I did it already.
I said run a walk. Our brains are addled from just the incredible sight.
This is going to happen every time I say Jason Syndulla. I'm going to say Jason Solo because he's named after Jason Solo from the expanded universe. So this is going to happen. I'm sorry, people. Leave your comments on the YouTube or don't. I don't care.
Yeah, no, it's like, it's please don't happen. Totally do that.
But it's going to happen. But know that it's because I love it and I'm really, really excited by this character. I love Jason Solo.
If I could just say, Brendan, as somebody that is currently covering The Wheel of Time, which is 14 books with 16,000 named characters in it, it's totally cool. It is your fandom showing, and I love it. Jason Solo all the way. Let's rename that kid. In space, you can have any name you want.
Yeah, let's Jason Solo Syndulla. There you go. That's his nickname.
Yeah, there it is.
Well, regardless of what he is named, he is coming through in clutch. Jason Clutch should probably be his name in this episode, as he helps lead a rescue mission that allows Ahsoka Tano back from the brink of death, seemingly, and giving us life again. In so many ways, in an absolutely sensational episode. Now, look, we were certainly looking at this thing with big old eyes, considering that the news had come out that episode 5 would be screened simultaneously in movie theaters. And certainly while watching this episode, a lot of the super duper wide shots, I definitely thought, oh man, this would play incredible on an IMAX screen. But even on the itty bitty comparison screen of my laptop, I still had an absolutely amazing time getting to check this out. And we are going to get into it all. First, some formalities right at the top here. Again, that New Republic bureaucracy here. You can always subscribe to our feed, postshowrecaps.com/Star Wars, for all of our Star Wars-based podcasts. Additionally, we are on YouTube, as Brendan mentioned, postshowrecaps.com/YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to not only check out all these Star Wars podcasts every week, but additionally coverage of shows like Billions, of Winning Time, which is coming to an end, of Rich's aforementioned Wheel of Time. We're also accepting feedback. We record these about 24 hours or so after the episode drops on Tuesday night. So please feel free to email us, starwars@postshowrecaps.com. If you're a Post Show Recaps patron, you can write it in on the Discord as well. And you can send us a holo. You can send us a line, a voicemail to give your thoughts. speakpipe.com/PSR Star Wars holo. Now, let's get into this. Let us step out onto this transparent walkway and see if it crumbles around us, or if we are indeed able to stand strong and engage in many lightsaber battles. I want to start with a piece of feedback here to guide our initial conversation from, unfortunately, one of our hosts that is in absentia tonight, of course, the great LaTanya Starks. And Rich, this was something that you and I talked about last week. Really curious as to LaTanya, who had not seen Rebels and doesn't know the world between worlds from a hole in the wall, which is what Ezra actually went through to get to the world between worlds back in Literally. Star Wars Rebels. How would she treat the trippiest thing I have ever seen in Star Wars? How would she receive this idea smack dab in the middle of this series without any prior context to it? These are LaTanya's comments in response to the past couple episodes of Ahsoka. Greetings, fellow Rebels. I'm so sorry that I missed out on the last 2 weeks of conversations. There's nothing more I'd love than to be there with all of you talking Ahsoka, because, wow, what a couple of episodes. Even though I'm only mid-Rebels watch, the last 5 minutes of last week's episode, complete with hello snips, left me flabbergasted and doing my best Natalie Portman impression as I eked out the name Anakin. I was barely prepared for the beauty of the world between worlds and how it was rendered on the screen. I don't know what I was expecting in the transition from animation to live action for the World Between Worlds scenes, but they were shot beautifully. And the kaleidoscopic blue hues reflecting the blues of the water in which Ahsoka was suspended during her trip to the World Between Worlds was stunning to behold. Another absolute gobsmacker of a shot when we get the flashback to the Clone Wars, and as Anakin is walking away, we see him, then Vader, then Anakin again. Spectacular. I found my emotions were all over the place, from seeing poor Hu Yang holding Sabine's helmet and lamenting that the two of them didn't just stay together, to young Jason somehow sensing a battle between Anakin and Ahsoka through another plane of existence, to entering the maw of a Purrgil to travel to another galaxy far, far away. I really enjoyed the episode. We even got a brief look at my precious mom, Bon Bon, attempting to stretch all of her diplomatic skills to keep our rebels from being court-martialed. By the way, Cetos is one of my all-time favorite Star Wars planets. I'm totally enthralled by its seaside atmosphere and lush red arboreal coverage and the apparent great celestial power there. Very much looking forward to the podcast and all of your thoughts. Now back to my back to tank as I go to dream up season 3.5 of The Mandalorian, as perhaps LaTanya is holding Din Djarin's helmet in her hands, much like Hu Yang did very mournfully. So, Rich, I don't want to put too many words for your mouth, but how much are you agreeing with what LaTanya had to say here?
Co-sign, Mike. I showed up last week and I felt a little self-conscious because I was a bit more tepid on the episode than most folks were. I was pretty critical of some of the choreography just didn't work for me. I wanted more exposition as we're running these 8-episode seasons. I do think it's gotten to a point where it's a bit problematic for me. There's sometimes not enough road to tell all this story, but gosh, I came in this week with a bit of trepidation, nervous, and within instance, I mean, Hu Yang has me crying the second we see that helmet in his hand, and I was sent. I don't know. I have been very outspoken about my affection for Andor. I think it's like the best thing that Disney has done with Star Wars since they got it, but this was extraordinary. The cinematography was incredible. The sound design was incredible. I am just so delighted, and I cannot wait to talk about it all with you both. This was an awesome, awesome, awesome episode of television.
Fitzy, how many awesomes are you giving this episode?
I'm going to go, what's the scale here? 5 awesomes? I'm going to go 5. I think I'm going to go full five. Full 5 awesomes.
Limit does not exist.
The limit does not exist.
Unlimited awesomes.
Unlimited awesomes, as little awesome words just come out of Palpatine's fingers.
Neat. Groovy. Amazing. Those are awesome words. Let's forget it. All right. Anyway, I absolutely adored this episode. And this is the thing, is I ended up watching this episode twice because the first time I watched it, I wasn't really as into it. Like, I wasn't digging it. I wanted more from the flashbacks. I wanted more from the world between worlds. I actually thought like the beginning was a little slow before we even got to Ahsoka and Anakin and their trip and their conversation. I don't know why I just wasn't feeling it. And then I rewatched it this afternoon before a podcast, and I like had a complete 180 turnaround on my feelings on this episode, where I was like, wow, what was I on last night? I must have been just cranky and out of it as I was watching this episode, because visually, like thematically, it was beautiful. I still have some questions about exactly what the lesson is that Ahsoka was supposed to learn in the world between
you
worlds.
You live or die. And Anakin made that very clear. That's what the lesson
is. But that's just life, though. That is just life. We all know that. We all know, like, that is...
Life
that is,
needs things to live, a famous person once said. Yeah.
I guess. But, like, the point is, like, I know there were a lot of questions as well in the Discord about, like, what we were supposed to take away from this trip as to what the growth of Ahsoka from this experience is going to be. And I still have some questions about that, exactly what she learned from this experience. I'll be curious to see what that is going forward. But I mean, what a freaking appearance from our two Syndulas in Hera and Jason, having an absolutely amazing episode. We even got some good Carson Teva. I think top to bottom, this episode was filled with amazingness. And like, yeah, Hayden just knocked it out of the park coming back as Anakin Skywalker. His voice reminded me a little bit of the Harrison Ford in the de-aged Indiana Jones in the last Dial of Destiny movie. Mm-hmm. But I got over that pretty quickly after, once I got used to, okay, his voice is a little older. He's not going to sound like he did. It's fine. But the revelation of this young actress they got to play a young teenage Ahsoka in the flashbacks.
Yeah, to the point where this incredible. Is certainly an actress who's been involved in Disney-based properties before, but after this, I'm asking, who is Gamora? Because she is now young Ahsoka, in my opinion.
Oh, it's the same actress. That's amazing. Yeah. That's incredible.
What is Gamora?
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean,
this is not her first trip into the world between worlds, then, because you know she got to ask Thanos, was it worth it? What did you lose?
Yeah, I'm just pretty sure when I die, I'm gonna see this girl. Like, I think she's absolutely now like recurring in all of our dreams. She is.
Are you an angel? That's exactly. You can ask her.
I will also say, yeah, Jason Syndulla. Look, kid actors in Star Wars, you can take or leave them. But with no offense to Jake T. Lloyd, I do think that the Jason Syndulla actor was certainly better than him.
Ran a lot like Leia when he was running back to the ship there,
with no flea there to block him. Well, listen, I completely co-sign everything that both of you and LaTanya said as well. This was just an incredible payoff on 20 years of a character relationship between a master and a Padawan. And it's so interesting, given that the credit really has to go, I think, to Ashley Eckstein and Matt Lanter at the end of the day. That, yes, Hayden and Rosario were able to carry this across this finish line to, like, I think, truly put a bow on this story that was a bit unresolved. But it's so interesting. I think they were able to slip so easily into the fact that these were not the characters that had built this relationship, but the writing in particular made it still feel very lived in. And so I really do appreciate what they were able to do there. I haven't read a lot of the scuttlebutt. Hopefully this was maybe the barrier to allow Star Wars fans to accept a bit more Rosario as Ahsoka, not to say that they weren't necessarily, that they were like an Ashley Eckstein only person, but that was an interesting thing to think about, the meta aspect, right? That like, these are these two characters talking to each other in this liminal world that kind of represents death, when they are played by essentially two different faces in live action.
I think, yeah, the two things that you're talking about that really resonated with me, Mike, is just this earned emotion, right? Like, I'm talking about getting all like worked up. I got really emotional very quickly. And I mean, we know like Sabine's not dead, right? But Huyang with the helmet, and like, this is earned emotion. They have put the time in. This is seasons of TV, years of our lives that we've invested with these characters. And so, you know, there's all this extra reading material that we are fortunate enough to have spent time with this summer, rewatching Rebels. But I felt like it really played off that extraordinarily well. And then the other thing you're talking about that I do think, to an extent, like, I've had some Rosario reservations, I guess, that I've articulated across the season. Like, it's hard to not like to know that Ashley Eckstein made this character who she was and was able to convey her for so many years and make her so beloved and so many Star Wars fans, like, number one favorite unambiguous kind of character. So to have it handed off to a new actor is kind of a big deal, and not always easy to make that transition. I think part of my reluctance to like love last week as much as this is related to those kind of issues, right? It's about the new interpretation of an Ahsoka, but this just was so powerfully and like genuinely emotional. It really was just excellent execution across the board from everyone involved, I think, in producing and performing in this episode.
All right, well, let's get a bit more into this before we get truly into the nitty gritty and we fall into the battlefield that is talking about this sublime episode of Star Wars television. Of course, we should do things with a quick plot recap. Episode 5 of Ahsoka shows a nearly abandoned Cetos following the climactic events of last week. Hera, Teeva, and company arrive too late as they see a sorrowful Huyang holding Sabine's helmet, mournfully saying, "I told them to stick together," and Rich lets loose a thousand tears. And though Sabine is unseen this episode, suffice it to say, we get a lot of Ahsoka Tano. We pick up right where we left off with her and some version of Anakin in the world between worlds. Her former master claims he is here to finish her training, his newest lesson, live or die. We get a battle between the two former Jedi as she remarks he doesn't have much left to offer. But he gets the last laugh, disintegrating the walkway and sending her tumbling down onto a battlefield. Ahsoka takes a walk down memory lane in a much younger body as she is thrown back into the smoke of the battlefield alongside Anakin during one of their first Clone Wars skirmishes. We go almost immediately into the aftermath, where she is clearly affected by all the clones that have been lost, in her opinion, at her own hands. Anakin, though, says they must adjust from keeping the peace to leading a war, which means they must be soldiers. As he charges headfirst back into battle, she sees errant images of the Sith Lord he will become in the smoke. Back in the real world, there may be hope yet of a rescue thanks to a young Jason Syndulla. He uses his feelings to guide his mother to listen to the water, where she is able to hear the lightsabers of Ahsoka and Anakin's first skirmish. Hera then leads a rescue operation that scours the planet with a surprisingly supportive Huyang by her side. Meanwhile, Ahsoka and Anakin seem to be on a similar-looking battlefield, but at a very different time. We're jumping from the beginning to the ending of Clone Wars during the Siege of Mandalore. Anakin tells Ahsoka that she will be everything that is within him, and both of their legacies are more than the battles of the Clone Wars. And here, she decides to reference the Purrgil in the room, alluding to Anakin's slide to the dark side. Suddenly, his demeanor changes, as does his lightsaber color. The lesson is over. The outcome, time to die. The two face off once again in the world between worlds, but finally, Ahsoka gets one over on her master, getting his own lightsaber to his throat. However, she chooses not to kill him, throwing his sword over the edge and choosing life. Anakin, in response, turns back to his old self, remarking, "There's hope for you yet," before disappearing. The world between worlds fades around her as water engulfs her. The water brings her back to reality as Hera's group rescues her out of the sea. Ahsoka comes onto her ship as Huyang explains to her Sabine's disappearance. Luckily, Ahsoka is able to use an imprint left on the destroyed map to basically do a previously on Ahsoka for the last episode. And as she sees the Purrgil flying overhead from a couple of episodes ago, she gets an idea. Meanwhile, the fleet has called in and Hera's got some splaining to do. Mon Mothma comes down with an iron fist, ordering her to return back to Coruscant, where she'll face disciplinary action and possibly being stripped of command. But in a final act of rebellion, she and Teyva help distract the New Republic long enough for Ahsoka to take one of the biggest gambles of her life. Ahsoka flies into the Purrgil pod, and relying upon some less regarded Jedi skills, she makes a bond with the biggest one of them all, as it allows her and Huyang to hitch a ride in its mouth. As the pod moves into space, everyone in the fleet marvels at the beauties around them. Ahsoka bids farewell to Hera, promising she'll return with Sabine. With one last, "May the Force be with you" from the Twi'lek, the Purrgil jump to hyperspace, hopefully taking Ahsoka to the location of her lost apprentice. Suffice it to say, there's a lot contained in there. I mean, let me start off as we get into more specifics with a broader point. Rich invoked Andor, which certainly had, particularly with the jail arc, something absolutely incredible, Emmy worthy, in my opinion. There have been episodes of The Mandalorian and even Clone Wars and Rebels that have been absolutely sensational. But Fitzy, let's put some recency bias here. Let it be our fuel pods for this ship. Is this one of the best episodes of Star Wars television ever?
This is certainly one of the best episodes of live action Star Wars television ever, just from a... even just from a visual point of view. Like, the visual effects of this episode and how they managed to even just make the Purrgil not look ridiculous and fake and stupid is an achievement. Like, especially when they're flying amongst the much smaller ships as they go out into space. Like, you have the tactile beauty of a place like Seatos, and the ridiculous, like, previously animated, now live action beauty of something like The World Between Worlds, and the fact that both can be made and work in this beautiful live action scale, and is just incredible. And I think that to put a really moving story of Ahsoka's journey through the Clone Wars to decide who she wants to be moving forward is a really impressive thing to do in the middle of this season that people have felt has been a little inconsistent so far. It's like, it was a big risk to do this episode, oh, yeah. I think.
Yes. And as risky as Ahsoka hiding in the mouth of a Purrgil to jump to somewhere unknown.
Yeah.
I think that I love what you're honing in on there so much, Brendan, especially just, you know, talking about it being one of the best live action episodes. I think that this show is inexorably bound to the animated series that we've got. You can't like separate them. But for so many people, it's going to stand on its own. They are never going to go view that material. Maybe they will now if this engages them enough. But I have to say, I think that it stands head and shoulders above pretty much anything that's ever been done on Mandalorian, if only because of all the work that was done already. Animated shows, right? And as you like, you know, you talk about kind of Brendan, like the final like beats of it all. I don't know, the way that it all came together, I think it's just greater than the sum of its parts. The visual language is stunning. Like it became really apparent to me immediately why this is being released on IMAX theaters across the country. Some of those shots were absolutely outlandish and amongst the most iconic of Star Wars shots immediately, right? Anakin like vanishing into the fog and the battle,
oh God,
and, like
so
Vader shots. Like I mean,
multiple Vader shots.
I've got the Jake Lloyd poster just back behind me on my wall with the Vader shadow behind it. That kind of like imagery always works so well, but I think it was just tremendously powerful and it felt like earned emotion. And what really worked for me is the way that it was metaphysical, it was psychological in nature. I often talk really flippantly about the fact that they're all child soldiers, because you have to. It's part of the DNA of this story. But the fact that we're actually like really just spent an hour of television unpacking this woman's PTSD is pretty incredible, man, for like mainline Star Wars. It's not Andor. It's not like that gritty and gnarly and like unpleasant necessarily, but God, we're dealing with the same kind of emotional weight in a way that like, it takes a lifetime to unpack all of that. And many people never will. So it just on every level for me is working really well.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I cannot speak highly enough about the design elements in this episode from a visual perspective and even from an audio perspective.
Oh, yeah.
My God, the slow fade of Hera closing her eyes and listening and hearing the small whooshes of the lightsaber was so, so good. Again, I can only imagine in like IMAX 4D surround sound how even better it sounds. But like, God, I wanted to go to Etsy ASAP and like start ordering prints from this episode. Obviously, you mentioned just the incredible thunderclap slash explosions that brought the sight of Anakin Skywalker into our minds. I mean, Rich, you invoke the poster for The Phantom Menace. It was very much that, right? This specter looming over him. Specters 1 through 6, I suppose. But for me, the one that really got me was when Anakin decides, like, okay, lesson's over. It's time to fight again. And you don't see the actual lightsaber. You only see the reflection in Ahsoka's eyes and the like subtle red hue on her face. And that's all you need to do. The fact that Anakin has officially gone red hat, in a manner of speaking, taking the red pill as opposed to the blue pill, I suppose. Like, I just think that was such a nice microcosm of what this episode was doing, which was like the power of suggestion, I think, without being so overt as to like, well, this represents this and this is this and this is Ahsoka officially saying goodbye to Anakin. You know, it certainly felt like that in a way, but I feel like there was so much subtlety and hinting towards it that, again, it feels very baked in with the relationship that they had. Didn't feel hand-holdy at the same time. And I was just absolutely stunned. To echo Latanya's point, I think the actual depiction of the world between worlds, we lived in here for like a hot second last week, but I think now that we spend more time in it, it is so beautiful. I mean, they have the volume. They can make it basically anything that they want, but just like, despite the fact that Star Wars takes place in space, I feel like it's been a while since we've just been in an endless void in Star Wars. And I feel like the visuals that were a part of that there, and obviously then blending it into the purposeful murkiness of the multiple battlefields, along with also the water, like there was this purposeful quality of opaqueness to it, of something you can't necessarily see through.
I mean, I think just generally, right? But like there was a lot of like visual ambiguity that you're talking about that is like so spot on. The wide shots were like stunning, man. I mean, this is unquestioningly been a very beautiful show from episode one, but there was a lot of ambiguity in the actual like subtext of what we're talking about, right? To Brendan's point of like, and a bunch of the folks in the Discord of like the lesson and what we're unpacking, is this Anakin, isn't it? Like we talked about last week, Mike, is this just like an interpretation in her mind of Anakin? Is it really his force? Because it almost doesn't matter to me. The restraint that you're identifying, that like Jaws thing of like less is more, was a very powerful tool for them.
Right? Yeah, I think one of the important things is that it's not a straight one-for-one recreation of the style of the World Between Worlds for Rebels, because I think that that would actually like lead people who are like us, who have watched that show and are so ingrained in what the World Between Worlds should look like from that show, that we would be confused why it's not working quite the same way when Ahsoka's going through it this time. So for them to take the idea of what the World Between Worlds is in Rebels visually and transport it into something a little more tactile and visually live action cooler, I think was really well accomplished here, and actually leads to a lot of cool fan theorizing questions that you can have about how this space works. Is this true time travel? Is this just mind palacing, leaping through your own dreams of these events? Is this the Force ghost of Anakin, or is this just her memory of Anakin? And it can't just be purely her memory, because he drops references to things in their dialogue that she wasn't there for. So my interpretation is that this is the, like, basically the World Between Worlds, in my interpretation of how they're using it on the show, is that this is basically a force, like a giant force cloud type thing, where when you're in the world between life and death, when you're near death is when you're most connected to the Force and can connect with Force ghosts and people on the other side most tactilely, to use tactile again, like most corporeally, is that the right word? Like it physically is. Yeah, corporeally. So the reason that she's able to see Anakin in full and fight him, and that this is the Force ghost version of Anakin, is because she is near death herself, and so she can see a more realized version of this Force ghost.
Well, and listen,
so that's my interpretation.
One of the many things I adore about this episode is that I do agree with your theory, Fitzy, for a number of reasons. One of them being, when we were watching the new remastered editions of Star Wars Return of the Jedi, what happens at the end of Yub Nub? Luke looks into the
forest. It's not even a Yub Nub anymore, Mike.
I know. Well, and include a, you know, generic royalty-free song here. We see three Force ghosts. We see Obi-Wan Kenobi. We see Yoda. Who else do we see?
Hey, Train.
Could it be we finally have an explanation as to why Hayden Christensen version of Anakin Skywalker displays here? That could be the case. I really liked your theory, because what I was reminded of was, you say Force Cloud, I say Jedi Save State. And I think that's actually explained really well when Ahsoka picks up the half of the map that was carved by the lightsaber. And she's like, able to basically recall what happened from it because of an imprint that was made on it. I do wonder if, whether it's through like Anakin dying or him interacting the Force or something, like this is a form of him. Now, I still don't feel like this is like the real deal Anakin, because again, I feel like what he represents to Ahsoka in this moment, I think makes makes more sense to me from a thematic perspective. But that's where I'm leaning towards in this moment. And to answer the question, it's like what the world between worlds is. I am inclined to say at this moment, this is the room of requirement of Star Wars. This
it's
is
a force what, gas station. Yeah.
Whatever you want it to be, it will be. If Ezra Bridger needs an allegory to have him come to terms with the fact that he can't save everybody, it's that. If it's an Ahsoka Tano, this is your life special that she needs to walk through all the PTSD she has, it's that as well.
I have like two, I guess, statements, right? So the, I guess the counterpoint to why it might not be actually Anakin, and I tend to lean with you guys, but according to like the timelines that we've gotten, this is running simultaneous with Mando season 3, which means Ahsoka's already gone to see Luke. She's deeply connected with Luke at the temple. Grogu has been dropped off. So all of this information, like the whole beat, I won't fight you, like, oh, I've heard that before. These are all stories that she could have gotten from the other half of that dynamic duo, right? She could very well know that story and be able to interpret that. And all of these memories that she's going back to, I mean, there's even one that like Anakin was not there for. It. It's like, wait, I wasn't here for this at the Battle of Mandalore.
Yeah, right? I remember.
In fact, the night you were fighting at the Siege of Mandalore, I was fighting in the Jedi Temple, killing all the young.
Right, I was slaughtering younglings, like my nephew will someday. The other thing is like, you know, I know some people are huge like death of the author. We don't want to know the creator's interpretation. But Filoni said this to Cinema Blend about the world between worlds. I don't really think of it as time travel. It's not really a thing where you go through one door and out another in a different time. The world between worlds is really about knowledge and gaining knowledge. As the Doom Wolf says, what's in there is knowledge and destruction. You can gain knowledge of the future or futures that may happen, and you can see things that have happened in the past. You can at times choose to alter them, but it's perilous to do so. And when you alter something, you don't know if it's not that way it's always happened. It's so destruction is the other half of what's in there, right? So it's very much like I spend a lot of time talking about time travel over here, post-show recaps. You guys, we just did a deep dive on Dark. We're doing a series of time travel movies. Is it whatever happened, happened? You know, it is very much like a closed system, I think, that we should understand it as. And I love, again, the ambiguity here. Is it Anakin? Is it not? It can be for you if that's what you need it to be to make it a more fulfilling experience. It cannot be for me if I want to reject that. And the world between worlds, to that point, can like fulfill these different roles. But it's not like the road that the DeLorean travels on for Ahsoka to be able to jump in and out. It's not going to like open up multiversal Star Wars in a way that like I don't think any of us really want it to, right? But it serves as an excellent vehicle to be able to explore this personal trauma and growth and this struggle and this lesson that we get to, you know.
Yeah, what I love about this as well is really I don't want to, you know, make the show called Ahsoka not about Ahsoka, but come on, the big to-do is Anakin Skywalker, is Hayden Christensen appearing in a much larger way than he did in Obi-Wan Kenobi, even though I think we lauded a lot of praise onto him, in particular with the battle with Obi-Wan and a lot of like the acting behind the mask that he did. I know you were talking about the sort of uncanny valley de-aging effects that we'd used on him early on, but I think it was used effectively, if only to showcase like how his features changed over, right? To the point where when they engage in that final battle, he essentially looks the equivalent of when he did on Mustafar, fighting Obi-Wan with the red eyes, with the sunken look, basically being two steps away from being behind a mask and saying, no, in ADR. I think it was so great. And then again, that to me represents, to your point, Rich, almost your philosophy of like, it can be whatever you want it to be, takes place in Ahsoka's mind as well of like, yeah, this could be literal Anakin, or to you, maybe this more so represents like the fact that you have to see him undergo this transformation that you never got to and saddled yourself blame with. And now you get this chance to sort of like take him on firsthand, finally best him. And even though, again, you were able to stave him off in Vader form previously, that Vader very cogently said that he killed Anakin Skywalker. Now's your chance to actually come to terms with him, the person.
Yeah, it's sort of like the world's biggest force cave. Like the galaxy's biggest force cave. Like think about like what you know Luke and Yoda's exchange on Dagobah in Empire, right before Luke goes into the force cave, and Yoda said, you know, Luke says, "What's in there?" And you know, Luke said, and Yoda says, "Only what you take with you." And that's exactly what is happening here. Ahsoka is coming into this world between worlds with all of her baggage and all of her feelings that she needs to reconcile about not only her role in the Clone Wars, but her role in, you know, leaving her master behind and her relationship with Anakin that she never fully got to resolve. I mean, she got to sort of in Rebels, but not really, not in a significant way that left her in the place that she is now. I think she's in a better, much better place now after this encounter than she was with the actual Vader in Rebels. So.
Which I think that's the point. I personally think that's the lesson.
Yeah.
That is the lesson. I mean, I know the de-aging, it's like not popular to be a fan of this. Mm. It usually is really bad, but I thought it was excellent. Like straight up, they're in this like ethereal reality between life and death, trapped between time. Like, yeah, he doesn't look like a normal person, nor should he. It's like the perfect spot to be able to use it. And I thought it was really, really effective. And I want to talk about this whole lesson, right? Because I do think it's super ambiguous. This idea of like, you can live or you can die. And to live, you have to fight. I mean, again, like we go back to those early battles and we see this child soldier struggling, reconciling. This is not what I signed up for. I did not sign up as to be like a teenager watching these soldiers around me all die. Like, doesn't this weigh on you? How can you make jokes? She's saying to him, it's really like a goofy movie, you guys, but there was a line.
No, that's another Disney property.
That's true. That is another property out there. There was a film 20 years ago called Elizabethtown, and Kirsten Dunst play is like the ultimate manic pixie dream girl, but she's got a line in there that has stayed with me for 20 years, which is that sadness is easy, right? Like to surrender to the like overwhelming sense of grief, of sadness, of tragedy. This is easy to do, right? Like dying is easy, young man. Living is harder. This is the message, right? If you want, you can drown yourself in all of this. You can be pinned down by the weight of grief that you have to bear on your back. But ultimately to live is to fight every day. You have to fight. You have to wake up. You have to get out of bed. You have to push past all of that baggage that is trying, like whispering in your ear that you're not worth it, that you're not good enough, that your lineage is like dark and dangerous and filled with murder and depression and all of it. You have to choose to rise above it and to battle through it. And that's like what we're getting at here, right? I don't know, it's a little like on the nose, and there's certainly ambiguity there, but that's like what I hear as like just a normal person who can't like pick up Volkswagens and throw them around with the force, right? As a guy who would love to have a lifesaver, but is like just a human struggling through my life, it resonates with me so powerfully that this is like the invisible struggle that we all have to deal with every day to fight past our own like demons and hangups and pain and trauma, right? And it just really worked for me on that level. Like, I know it's not super clear, but I think there's power to the ambiguity in it.
Incredibly so. I mean, look no further than the image that we leave in The World Between Worlds, which is Ahsoka floating just below the surface of the water. And in that moment, she is kind of presented with a choice. She can just allow gravity to take its course, do nothing, get dragged into the black abyss, and die. Or she could do something hard, something that takes work, but something that will ultimately bring her back to the surface, give her that breath that she needs, and allows her to continue to live. And it's so interesting because you wonder, okay, then why is she replaying, you know, the first battle and the last battle she participated in, essentially, in her head? Why is she relitigating all this stuff? And I wonder if it's either herself or The World Between Worlds reminding her that she is a fighter, that this is something that she has consistently done. I mean, listen, you two both know I've been exploring BSG for the first time. I have been loving the sort of attitude that she and Sabine as well the past couple of weeks have espoused of like, I want to be a Jedi. I'm a keeper of the peace. I didn't sign up for this. And Anakin being like, none of us signed up for this. We're the keepers of peace in more ways than one right now. We have to learn to adjust. And even though Anakin's methods are a little odd over the course of this episode, I purposely see that as not only the lesson, but the purpose of sort of the bullet points of the syllabus leading to the lesson, why we are taking so many runs alongside these clone troopers, why we are seeing said clone troopers die in copious amounts around her, is this idea that dying is something that could easily happen in a blip, either for a greater purpose or not. as you mentioned, Rich, living is harder, but it is worth it.
For me, Brendan, it really resonated with that Tales from the Jedi episode, right? Mm-hmm. Of Anakin training her and like, yeah. I'm going to give you the tools to survive. I want you to stay alive no matter what will happen. And it's like the last bit of that, right? That like, mm-hmm. I've given you everything I can. You need to choose now whether or not you want to draw these weapons that you have been trained to use that are not your lightsabers, but like the psychological, like, tools that you have to equip yourself with across this journey of war and hardship that we have gone through, and choose to live, you know, and like choose optimism. And I mean, all of like the symbolism of like the Ahsoka the White, the Gandalf the White of it all, right? The Return of the King, the Return of the Jedi. Like,
yeah,
and you couldn't aim closer to home for me.
Yeah, she literally has a white shroud that she's wearing, and now she
comes back wearing a white bathroom, basically.
Yeah, and she's also super OP, basically coming through like over you know, the Helm's Deep, just with basically the Rohirrim alongside her, just like ready to ride into battle. I mean, that's essentially what the Purrgil are at this point, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, there's just so much we can say about this. It is such a beautiful exploration of this character, and without question, the most important relationship in her life. I guess when it comes to that lesson, I'm intrigued, Fitzy, from your perspective, what do you think she's going to take forward into her own relationship with Sabine from here? Because obviously there was some talk, even explicitly Anakin, or I think Ahsoka herself was talking about like, when I have, you know, my own Padawan, what should I do? Do you think she is going to take anything from this experience through this jog of a memory about what Anakin was able to provide and not provide for her as a master to when she inevitably reunites with her own Padawan?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Ahsoka was getting towards this, and this episode sort of solidified it, of like, she needs to let go of her fear that Sabine might not be the person that she wants her to be, and embrace who Sabine is fully. And let Sabine be the warrior that she's meant to be, not the warrior that Ahsoka wants her to be. Let Sabine fight in the way that Sabine best can. And that's how Sabine will be able to unlock her power. Give her the empowerment to be the warrior that she needs to be, not the warrior that you want her to be. But, you know, but also to let her live and let her live her life. Because it's her, ultimately her choice of how she lives. And then, it's important to live overall. But the choice to live is yours and yours alone. No one else can make it for you. And so that's sort of what I think she'll impart into her future conversation with Sabine.
I think you're like spot on, right? I mean, Sabine's like a Mandalorian. This is the whole big thing. Their whole culture is like about war, right? They're like the ultimate warriors. And ultimately, Ahsoka's trying to train her with this conventional Jedi wisdom, right? Exactly. Like Yoda trains Luke. Yoda's not training Luke how to wield a lightsaber. He's trying to like teach him how to master the living force and how to utilize like these greater strengths to be at one with his feelings. And in that same way, I think like to a degree, Ahsoka's trying to train Sabine away from that warrior instinct. And it is exactly what you're saying, Brendan. Like she needs to be the Jedi that she's going to be, who is a warrior. She like had chosen this path before she ever began this road to training, this Padawan apprenticeship. And Ahsoka needs like a bracelet that and let go of her fear, right?
Well, let's move from the metaphysical just to the regular physical and talk about what's happening on Cetos as Hera and her family really save the day here. I mean, we had Jason Syndulla drop the classic I have a bad feeling about this, but his feelings will very much carry forward in a good way in this episode. And I know this caused a bit of confusion as well with the murkiness, quite literally, of the world between worlds. I know Austin pointed out, like, okay, maybe it isn't a physical place because Jason was able to hear from however many miles or universes away the lightsaber clash. Rich, what did you make of Jason's nascent powers becoming awakened here?
I love it, right? The Force like surrounds us and binds us. It flows through all things. Like it is like ambiguous. I don't know. Like she fell off a cliff and now she's in an alternate.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so much uncertainty here. But I think this is like an extraordinary way to use your child actor. I love the small throwaway of like his dad and the whole Carson Teva response, right?
Oh, that was it's fantastic. Last week, right? I had said, like, I don't know if Kanan's gonna be name dropped at this point in the show. And the fact that A, Hu Yang just like references it, and Teva just completely no sells, like, yes,
okay.
Sir.
Yeah, whatever, man.
Literally different shit, same really... day at this point. A bunch of pergola are gonna fly by my face in like 2 hours. I'm going through a lot of things today.
It was really like just a tremendous little beat there, but I think it's an excellent use of Jason, right? Like I was so like adamant that I needed his inclusion here. If you're gonna incorporate Hera in this female-led Star Wars project, the fact that she is a mother to the son like of a man that she loved and lost in the midst of this rebellion is of critical importance, right? Mm-hmm. And not because Hera's identity is so tied to these men, but like she's a mother. That's a really important role as
mother.
A woman, right? She is mother. Taylor taught me this recently.
Wait till you find out what Riz is. I'm not talking about the popular Star Wars.
I'm still working on that one, Mike. But I do think that like the use of Jason here and him hearing the lightsabers, you talk about the sound design. This was just awesome. And the fact that he gets Hera to stop and listen. And that, like, she connects. I'm, you know, again, I'm much less, like, tied up in the kind of, like, the actual physical reality of what's going on here. Like, on the level of the Force has always been super vague, and that is the power to it. The more ambiguous it has been, the more applicable it is for all of us, the more universally applied it becomes, whether you're Hindu or Islamic or Christian or Jewish or you're a Unitarian Universalist. You can understand this and, like, bring it into your kind of belief system in a way. So I love this use of Jason. And I thought him running like Kid Leia was just like fantastic as well.
Yeah. To your point, Fitzy, it's almost like if you assign some sort of like scientific value to the amount of force that exists in your bloodstream, that's probably not a good choice for the religious thematics around this grand idea.
Well, forget the bloodstream. I mean, we are on a planet that we have been set up with the knowledge that this planet that we're on that has this map on it has a very strong force connection on this planet. This planet itself is teeming with life, and that life is connected to the Force. The Kurgle that are flying above are massive Force beings in the galaxy that have the Force glowing through them, and as well as the hyperspace butts. You know, I mean, the fact, so it's very easy for someone even as young as Jason Syndulla to tap into the natural energy of this planet and find someone who's in a similarly as strong in the Force place like the World Between Worlds. The fact that like he can reach out with his feelings in a place like this and sense Ahsoka and what the massive Force event she's experiencing doesn't surprise me at all, really. Like it makes sense to me as like a Star Wars brain person that of course, because this place is so strong in the Force, it's amplifying whatever Force ability he has to such a degree that even Hera, who we don't know has ever really been quote unquote Force sensitive in the natural phrase.
She had the Force in her in a couple times, I would say. Several years.
Yes, Mike. Full bloom, but is able to hear the lightsabers as well, which is, you know, so there you go. Like, that's how strong in the Force this place is. And so I think it's fine by me that's like the simple explanation for it is it's strong in the Force. It's amplifying the Force powers, blah, blah, blah. Everybody can hear it.
It's a great use of Kid Jedi, you know, like it's cool to have him there, but he needs to be more than like just like the token reminder of like, we got it. He's here. Right. OK, don't complain. Like it was cool to give him like a deeper role here. And it was a fitting role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you speak about the Purgo. Let's talk about this absolutely beautiful conclusion to the episode and just the pure sight. I think if anything, perhaps was able to push the Anakin Ahsoka Mind Palace stuff off the pedestal for like moment of the episode, for some people it might have been this conclusion. of the Purrgil, as we talked about last episode, being used here, following their migratory patterns, hopefully to where Morgan and Skull and Shin had taken Sabine, to hopefully find Ezra and unfortunately Thrawn as well. And what I adored about this is you guys mentioned Tales of the Jedi. Let's remember the first episode of Tales of the Jedi
from called a timeline life and death.
Yeah,
right?
There we go. The lesson was in her initially, but this is talking about the birth of Ahsoka Tano and subsequently her being discovered to be force sensitive and the Jedi obviously showing interest in her therein. And we see that from a young age, Ahsoka Tano has had this preternatural ability to bond with animals. This is something that isn't really talked about in the Clone Wars, because I would say outside of the Zillow beast, they're not dealing with a lot of natural fauna. And obviously this is something that's been dealt with much more in Ezra Bridger's camp, even with the Purrgil itself. Mm. So this is why it's great to have this sort of like one overseeing auteur, in my opinion, in Dave Filoni, who created Ahsoka Tano, who did Tales of the Jedi, for him to bring in this moment of Ahsoka being able to dust off, much like she's been jogging through the memories that have made her who she is, going back to something she probably doesn't even remember, a skill that has lay hidden in her, much like with Jacen Syndulla, being able to just reach out her hand, go wing walking for the second time in three episodes, and connect with the biggest damn Purrgil you've ever seen in your life, Fitzy.
It's beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful. Like, it's such a perfect mirrored shot of what happens in Tales of the Jedi, with she's confronted by this giant, like, saber-toothed tiger looking lion creature in the middle of the jungle when she gets separated from her mother, and she's able to bond with the creature just by, like, sticking her hand out and, like, the creature slowly coming in and touching its nose to her hand, and then, like, they're friends, and she rides his back into their village, and the whole, you know, town is saved. It's wonderful. But yeah, it's like such a beautiful mirrored shot of her holding out her hand to the Purrgil here, and the Purrgil just slowly opening its mouth. And she's like, all right, I guess we can go in. Yeah.
I mean, pretty dark ending if the Purrgil just like swallowed her down, Monstro style, right? Like, that's the end.
Yeah.
It's such a great mirrored shot, too, of another moment in Empire when they have, when they're in the asteroid and they have the giant sand worm that starts to come crashing down as the Falcon is flying out of it. And you see the teeth and closing around and they barely make it out. So it's like a reverse shot of that. It's wonderful.
The design was so sick, too. Yeah. I think they call them the baleen or whatever, the like filter, that hair filter in the whale mouth. Yeah. Like, it just was so, so cool. And, you know, we talked a little bit last week, Michael, like, is she going to use the world between worlds to like eject out the other side? Is that how she's going to catch Sabine? I'm so glad she didn't. Yeah. I'm really like, to that Filoni beat that I read, I really love that it's not like a teleportation area or like some doorway between. Like, I love the reincorporation of the Purrgil. I've been thinking this from the beginning of like, nobody has tried to find some Purrgil.
Are the Purrgil the eagles of Star Wars?
Yes, exactly.
The Purrgil are here.
Yep, the Purrgil are coming.
The Purrgil, like during the Clone Wars, we could have resolved this whole thing, you know?
So we look ahead as to what's to come. So obviously, listen, I have to imagine it's going to be a pretty quick trip. I don't think Ahsoka is going to get sidetracked. Yeah. This isn't Pokemon or Quantum Leap.
There's a side quest inside the Purrgil next time.
Not if we've got three episodes left. Certainly
I thought
not.
They smelled bad on the outside.
The larger question I have, though, is the Genevieve O'Reilly cameo in this episode. Hera does remain behind. I have to imagine if she was in hot water with the New Republic after, you know, springing out with her own fleet to try to, like, get stuff done, she's even hotter water considering she, like, belayed them to allow Ahsoka Tano to jump away with a bunch of Purrgil. Rich, do you think we're going back to Coruscant next episode? Are we going to try to follow this action from Hera's perspective?
It feels like, you know, we've been tracking Hera with the New Republic for at least like the B plot along the way through these first four episodes. I was saying to Fitzy before we sat down the night that I really love that she got so much to do here. I know a lot of folks are really disappointed, like she's not going to be going on the journey, but I don't know. I got to think that we get a little bit of the fallout here, because part of Ahsoka's decision to go is that she is leaving her friend. in hot water, right? I mean, that's what Mon Mothma's saying. Like, you know, you need her testimony. This is going to be really bad for you, right? So I think we got to track it a little bit, but God, I hope we don't spend a lot of time there. This is where I'm really like feeling that 8-episode beat. And I do think like, for me, it's not just like the consumer in me that wants more, whose appetite cannot be sated. I do think we run out of room to do all the storytelling we want. This is sometimes where we feel like things are get rushed and there's not enough attention spent on stuff. So I hope if we go back to Coruscant, it's not for like a lot of time, but I do feel like we have to, right?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we definitely have to. I think we definitely have to get more from both Hera and Jason and whatever ramifications are going to come from Mon Mothma. I mean, we've been getting seeds of the crumbling of this New Republic, you know, for a couple of different, you know, seasons of TV now between The Mandalorian and this. So we sort of had this seeded along the way with the Carson Teva character and a couple other instances that, like, New Republic ain't doing so great, and they're continuing to show us how this bureaucracy is going to eventually fail. And I like getting that seeded, you know, a little bit through every one of these shows. And so if we keep doing that as a B plot, but it's like a very little B plot, I'm cool with it. Especially if it leads to, like, I know, like, we don't want to get out over our skis with, like, maybe this person will show up, maybe this person will show up, but if it can lead to at least a couple more surprise people that we didn't know were going to be on the show popping up in the Hera storyline since she's staying behind, that would make a lot of sense to me and be very cool.
Oh, you heard it here first, folks. Senator Jar Jar making an appearance in episode 6 of Ahsoka.
I think this is the spot for your Zeb appearance, though, I mean, right, got, Brandon?
We also got a Leia name drop in the episode. I don't think they're going to do the DH caricature again, but they did say Senator Organa at one point, so...
I mean, that's not even a DH kid. That's just creating a person out of thin air.
They did it with Peter Cushing, and let's never do it again.
Yeah. Leave Leia alone, you guys.
Let me also just drop something here right now that is going to happen in episode 8. I 110% believe we're going to end this series with Hu Yang training Jason Syndulla.
That moment is so adorable. Can I have a lightsaber? No.
Yeah, like, oh, can you make them? Yes. Can I have one? No. I think we're going to have Jason on the T-Wing, like, practicing with all those fun swords at the end of episode 8. Because, like,
what I really don't like is the implication of where this leads if he ends up being one of Luke's students.
You think he's going to get Kylo'd?
No, listen, we had this with Grogu as well. He's going to stay for, like, a season of television and then leave. It'll all be okay.
As long as he gets a suit of chainmail, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Listen, they're undoing everyone who died during Order 66. They're going to undo everybody who got burned alive at Luke's school.
I think we're officially at 114 Jedi that have survived Order 66. Like, we're definitely in triple digits. It's pretty wild.
There were thousands and thousands, right?
I feel you.
We'll be all right.
One little beat that I really thought, like, stood out, like, the point you were talking about, Mike, where Ahsoka, like, kind of reads through the memory, the, like, psychometry, she picks up the map. I've been talking a lot about Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor, that, like, Fallen Order series is kind of what it's called, of these last, like, EA Star Wars video games. Cal Kestis is the lead character in that. This is one of his signature abilities, and this whole area in Cetos, everything that's happening with the star map, with another galaxy, this is hewing so closely to a lot of, like, the plot points and the storylines that we got in the Fallen Order games, that I know fans of that are, like, really feeling the connective tissue there. And I just kind of love that little beat.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, let's keep the favorites going and talk about some of our superlatives from this episode. Emphasis on super, because this episode was absolutely super. Fitzy, you have the toughest job to start us off here. Your favorite scene or moment from Shadow Warrior?
Ooh, this is tough. This is really tough. I think I have to give it to the second Anakin Ahsoka fight after they come back from Mandalore, from the Mandalore flashback, and he's like walking towards her and he like flashes between like Vader, Anakin, 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 Vader, Anakin, mm-hmm. Anakin, Anakin. And that fight, the second fight, is so like beautiful visually as well. And then Ahsoka wins and his eyes change. Like, it's that, yeah, that whole second fight just really works for me. Yeah.
What about you, Rich?
Yeah, it was a really good one, Brendan. Even her eyes changing, the sound design, all of it. Like, it's really heavy. So there's one little beat where she's confronting him. And I don't even remember exactly structurally where it is in the episode, but she's talking about, yeah, you were more powerful and more dangerous.
Yeah.
And your legacy is of death and destruction. And he says to her, that's not all I am. And to me, like, that is the thesis of what we're talking about. That is the lesson. That is the, like, live or the die of it, right? The episode's called Shadow Warrior. Like, I don't need to get too deep into my Jungian psychology here, but like, it's the shadow self, right? It's the like unseen part of yourself, conscious, the part you can't reflect on. And the idea that he's there articulating that to her, like, yeah, that's part of our legacy. That is not all of it. It's such a single line, but like, in amidst an episode that I want to say the whole thing is my favorite part.
I know.
That line is my favorite part. That is the like power, I think, that we can take out of this beautiful hour of Star Wars.
So I'll rewind back to a little bit. I'll stay on what looks to be the same battlefield, but apparently definitely isn't. I'm going to go with the scene that takes place in the aftermath of this first battle that Ahsoka and Anakin are involved with. First, just again, the stark image of not only is this a young girl thrust into the mass casualty of war, but the fact that, as she points out, she is also leading countless numbers of people to their death. I think this was so beautifully performed. I think it is very much addressing something that people have talked about for years, the wars in Star Wars. It is rough. But again, the way that Anakin, whatever form he is taking, approaching this, here, as Ahsoka says, this isn't what I trained for. And Anakin reply, we must adjust to the times. Again, this idea that Obi-Wan told him to be a keeper of the peace. Sometimes being a keeper of the peace means having to enforce it with the sword rather than the handshake. And then again, honing in on what, in my opinion, is the main lesson that she leaves the world between worlds with, where Anakin is joking about how teaching's not all it's cracked up to be. And she's like, you should be serious about this. And he glibly tells her that to lead, she has to fight. And she says, and what if I want to stop fighting? He says, then you'll die. And then that builds beautifully to that first time we see him just run into the smoke, light blazer gleaming. It turns to red. We see the image of Vader, and that's it. And even though, again, we'll get it in echoes to the point that you guys made over the course of the rest of this episode, I just thought it was such a brilliant introduction to not only that, to that part of Anakin, essentially, that obviously this is taking place at a time that is years from his descent into this Sith Lord. But even in this moment, he's like, yep, it's a necessary thing you got to do. Got to get your hands dirty if you're playing in the mud. And the fact that he was showcasing his capability and even in some cases his like not gleefulness, but willingness to do this. And I think this leads into Ahsoka's ultimate decision to not kill him, even if she feels like, OK, this isn't the real Anakin. She is going to choose life when in this moment, Anakin is saying that death is essentially an inevitability.
Yeah, so season one of Clone Wars ends with a three-part season finale around the planet Ryloth, which is when Ahsoka is given her very first command. And what we're seeing in this scene with her and Anakin and you see a couple of Twi'leks in the background of a couple of shots, is the fallout from that battle and her, like, heartbreak at the fact that she has, like, led her first mission, and that leadership has led to the death of so many beings, so many people, all of these clone troopers who she had control over, and they put her trust, their trust in her, and she and them, and a lot of them died, and her having to reconcile that is such a big part of who she is. And again, as you said, she's a 14-year-old yep. leading a freaking army of clone troopers. What are we doing? Yeah.
It's right, just awesome to like see us yeah. reapproach that with a much yeah. more like grounded view, right? Mm-hmm. When it was just kind of like a flipping story point when we opened up that story, it really is mm-hmm. Tremendous. Not to mention all of like the lightsaber changes, the like headpiece designs, getting to see her without the headpiece on it. It's such sure. an achievement, this episode. I don't mean to keep like running wild, Mike, but yeah.
No, well, let's keep on running through the smoke and talk about character of the episode. Listen, I'm a basic bitch in this moment. I got to go with Ahsoka Tano. I mean, this was her episode between having to go through her own mind palace, refighting these battles, taking on her master, one of the most powerful Jedi to ever exist, and winning yet again, being the one to choose life in that moment, and her choosing life as well, her getting rescued, and then ending it all by concocting this absolutely ridiculous plan that will 100% work. Connecting with the most gargantuan creature in Star Wars history, it's gotta be her, right?
I'm giving it to Anakin. I think that you don't get the growth that Ahsoka gets out of this episode if you don't have Anakin there to lead her, and I gotta give it to Anakin. I think this is a wonderful return to form for Hayden Christensen, a redemption of his own. It's absolutely beautiful to see. Yeah,
I talked a bit last week about how, like, you know, I'm not all, like, the Anakin appearances are exciting, but, like, sometimes I'm a little bit like, okay, but isn't this somebody else's project? What are we doing too much Anakin? This was tremendous. This was, like, an absolute, like, perfect use of this character to deepen Ahsoka's story. If you didn't pick him, I would have, Fitzy. But since you did,
thunder, buddy.
Since you did, I'm just going to double down on Ahsoka because it's fair Ahsoka's enough. Show. And like, I love this woman. I think that she is a tremendous role model. I think that she's a tremendous icon in Star Wars for female Star Wars fans that have been like spent the last 20 years looking at her as their Jedi. And I love the space that she exists in. By the end of it, this Ahsoka the White Trip, like, I know some people are out there like throwing darts and rolling their eyes, like, you guys, it's called Return of the Jedi. Like, there's definite Return of the King inspiration there, like, these are the themes of mythic stories, right? And we do retread the same ground a lot of the time, but we do it in different ways. Ahsoka Tano is an all-time Star Wars character. This was the episode of her show so far. It's Ahsoka.
Plus, it's easy, Rich, for you and I to then just say best side character slash cameo is Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, that's a pretty easy. That's fair. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
What about you, Fitzy, since obviously I don't think Ahsoka would be considered a side character?
You're going to Anakin times two. I will just give it to Jason. I mean, without little Jason Solo Syndulla there, he would not be, you know, Ahsoka wouldn't have been found. It's beautiful. I love it.
I think it's great. I love Solo Syndulla. He's my favorite kid. Yeah.
The Poe Dameron sartorial choice here, Rich, in space and apparently in a liminal mind palace, you can be what you want to be and wear what you want to wear. What's the piece of garb that you want to highlight this episode?
It's definitely her outfit at the end, right? As she comes out onto the ship to load in with the Purrgil, like, she's got the cool poncho. Again, Star Wars Fallen Order fans, you guys know poncho. Cal Kestis loves a poncho. I love her with the like knitted poncho, but this white garb with like the samurai pieces that are literally like tied. She's got bracers. She's got hand plates. It was stunningly beautiful. I know we got hyped for the spacesuit, but like, forget it, man. She looked so good. That was an incredible outfit.
What about you, Fitzy?
I think I have to give it to young Ahsoka's Clone Wars getup. Seeing that in live action is just tremendous. Like, I mean, it's beautiful. Yeah, it's like so simple, yet so like fantastic. Like, yeah.
It was excellent, especially no tube top. No tube tops,
you know. Yeah.
Thank you for not doing the tube top. Yep.
Is it weird to say, now this is not the first time we have seen one of these New Republic vessels. Of course, this was the setting of the cold open of this series. But I kind of love the color scheme. Like, they suck, but the blue on white, oh, say magnifique, baby. Yep. I might have to go with, like, the interior design of the bridge of the fleet ship to try to block them from doing anything. I don't know. It just looks so immaculate to me. I guess purposely so, because again, they're supposed to be by the book, but it's just something that really pinged on my radar more so than the first time around.
It's very beautiful. I think it's a really great color palette, and they definitely got styled, this New Republic. I think I got a just honorable mention, Anakin in the Clone Wars armor, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
he looked so freaking awesome with the plates, with the shoulder plate in the black. Like, that was very, very cool to see that real, you know.
All right, final category, best Easter egg / canonical reference of the episode. I'll start here because this was a blink and you'll miss it. And you're probably blinking a lot of times because there was a hell of a lot of smoke out there. But when we're dropped into the second battlefield here, something that helps set the pace and the place is that we see a clone trooper one run by once again, but it is a very specific clone trooper, as the subtitles indicate. I'm talking about Rex. Captain Rex making an appearance here. Obviously, someone who is going to be side by side alongside Ahsoka, fighting off his brothers to escape Order 66 imminently. Again, it was really small. I wish we got more of him.
Yep.
I wasn't sure if this was Temuera Morrison or Dee Bradley Baker's voice.
I think it was Temuera Morrison.
Temuera Morrison, yeah.
Okay, so that's interesting that, like, much like we've talked about, you know, Matt Lanter and Ashley Eckstein kind of being askew, so has Dee Bradley Baker, though he's got his work cut out for him on the Bad Batch, so I think he's fine to sit this one out. So it's fun to see, just like for a brief second, a reminder of someone else who was also very important in Ahsoka's life during her time in the Clone Wars, and then unfortunately kind of leaving her behind. Fitzy, what about you?
Yeah, so this is weird and random, and I didn't realize this until I was looking up the cast list later. So Brendan Wayne is one of the X-Wing pilots who jumps in and saves Ahsoka. Brendan Wayne, I believe, is one of the actors behind Din Djarin, right?
Yes,
oh,
that's 100% true. He's one of the guys in the suit.
So
yes.
Here he is getting to actually show his face, sort of, on screen, and rescue Ahsoka from the water. So there you go. That's my Easter egg of the episode.
I keep going with the dialogue, you know, because I think that the whole thing was just such a visual, like, feast that we got to have that it's hard to pick amidst the kind of the choices that we have. But it's the beat of "I won't fight you." I've heard that before. That just wrecked me, man. There were a couple points, like, early in this episode where I'm, like, legit, like, just crying, right? And I'm like a soft touch, you guys. But it, like, that leveled me, man. I love it. I love when we use those kind of callbacks that are not just member berries, but actually have, like, some real emotional impact and are, like, relevant to what we're doing a little bit. I really love that. That's my moment. I won't fight you. I've heard that before.
All right. Well, let's get into some feedback from the listeners of post-show recaps, because suffice it to say, there was a lot to talk about. Now, a bunch of it was hashing back and forth talks about, like, well, what does the world between worlds mean to you? Which, in my opinion, means the world between worlds fulfilled its purpose, in that it's whatever you want it to be for both Ahsoka and us proper. So here are, I think, some more foundational pieces of feedback referring to the episode. Let's start with a Sunny piece of feedback from none other than Sunny, who says, okay, I have to start with why the world between worlds Clone Wars flashbacks made me so emotional in the best way, because honestly, I have just been sitting here for a bit trying to figure out why it moved me so much. I think the first answer is that getting to see Hayden Christensen live in the era of Anakin he originated, but with the added weight of the Clone Wars series context, was incredible. I thought he did a fantastic job with the fight choreography and differentiating between the Anakin with snips in her first battle versus the Revenge of the Sith era Anakin that fought her with a red blade. The glitching into Vader, especially while walking into battle, could not have worked more for me. Like, I enjoyed seeing him in Kenobi, but what he got to do here was next level. But the other reason that segment impacted me so much is that one of my biggest sequel gripes is what Palpatine's return does to ultimately minimize the significance of Vader choosing to protect Luke and turn against Palpatine. If Palpatine comes back anyway, it makes Vader and what he does so much smaller than the character deserves. So that in a trilogy that did lots of things that bothered me and, you know, lots of other fans, that was the one that really lost me. So to have the mythos of Anakin present in this series, to have his influence as a Jedi still felt by these Clone Wars era characters and Hu Yang and especially Ahsoka, helps restore the character to more of the status in the franchise that I want to see Anakin slash Vader in. I'm generally in favor of not leaning as heavily on the Skywalkers going forward, but because I was still feeling bothered by that sequel move, this particular use worked for me. I'm hoping it's the only Anakin, because I think more would be pushing it too far for me. I'll stop right there for a second. Rich, you're giving the thumbs up right now. Was this redemption for Anakin Skywalker?
Yeah, it was tremendous, right? As somebody that like isn't looking to see Anakin in these properties, this is the excellent way to use him. And exactly. I think that Sonny's like honing in on some great stuff about why people are so viscerally opposed to a lot of the stuff in the sequel trilogies, because it undercuts what came before it. It like robs power. And this is a great way to re-empower the character, but like let's keep him off the rest of these three episodes. We got it, right? I don't think we need to like keep him coming. So
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, like you can't do Ahsoka without this, the use of Anakin in an episode like this, but you also don't need to overdo it. And I don't think that they will. And I think this is like the perfect use and the perfect way to re-empower the character. Let's re-empower the character of Anakin Skywalker, please. And this did it. So there you go.
Sonny goes on to say, I also agree that casting Ahsoka with a legit teen was a great idea, and I'm wondering if it will help the show start exploring the idea of how many of our faves were essentially child soldiers a bit more. It was quite impactful to me in terms of remembering her age. That being said, I can see why there could be debate about why this extended world between worlds sequence goes precisely here, and whether or not episodes 1-4 put Ahsoka into enough of a state of crisis slash doubt that she needed a cathartic memory walk with her master, but I am willing to admit that the segment did so much more holistically as a Star Wars fan for me that I'm willing to overlook that in favor of just saying how much I loved it. Aston adds on to the first point that Sonny made, saying, something I mentioned in the Discord way back after episode 1 was that Ahsoka, Sabine, and Ezra were all in their mid-teens during Slum or all of their stories in Clone Wars and Rebels. They were child soldiers. This is something that, as far as I'm aware, has never been really explicitly addressed in anyone in movie slash TV canon, but is definitely a prominent part of the lives of many Star Wars characters. Even Padme was only 14 during the Battle of Naboo. Originally, I wondered whether this important aspect of their stories might get acknowledged as Ahsoka and Sabine try to mend their relationship, but in showing us young Ahsoka in this week's episode, that point got driven home hard, even without saying it out loud. We can see that she's only a young teenager, and it encourages the audience to really process the fact that she was part of a whole generation of teenage Padawans, children, fighting in the Clone Wars. While it's an unpleasant topic, I'm so glad the show had the guts to go there and build on the momentum of this era of Star Wars storytelling to start really tackling the theme of what's wrong about the Jedi Order, and particularly their approach to things in the Clone Wars. And Fitzy, I'll add on to all of that, another teenager thrust into the arms of battle, none other than the person who said, may the Force be with you, to end this episode, in Hera Syndulla.
Absolutely. I mean, Hera was like 8 the first time she picked up a blaster, you know? I mean, the war is a part of this galaxy. It's in the title. I mean, war touches everyone, and there's no way to avoid it in this galaxy, unfortunately. And it's just one of those things that every character has to grapple with what their place is in the war, and the people that choose not to die.
It ain't called Star Peace.
For real. I spoke in a lot in the last hour here about, like, you know, we're unpacking PTSD. That's what this episode is, right? It's about her survivor's guilt. It's about her PTSD in the same way that, like, Sabine's carrying it. I think the only character we've ever really had in live action, certainly, that, like, interrogates this on any level is Cassian Andor, and that's part of why I think that show was as strong as it was. So I think it's a brilliant choice, and Aston spot on.
All right, one final piece of written feedback from Drayson, I think kind of summing up our overall thoughts on this episode. I loved every minute of this. I wish I had more coherent analysis or praise to offer than that, but it really is that simple. I loved it. I think the choice to use the world between worlds in this way as something Ahsoka's possibly dying mind uses as the setting for a dream that Anakin uses to speak to her through the Force was brilliant, because it introduces the visual concept without having to explain everything about it for people who do not know what it is. I thought the CGI on Hayden to make him look like Clone Wars Anakin, parentheses, the best Anakin, was at times remarkable, and it was very, very cool to see him in the Clone Wars armor, which looks even more Vader-like in live action. And the little flashes when he turned into Vader were amazing. And seeing the Siege of Mandalore in live action and hearing and seeing Rex even for just a moment made my kids, for whom the Clone Wars is the version of Star Wars they imprinted on as younglings, go crazy. The lightsaber choreography was absolutely on point. Hayden has not lost a step at all in the regard, and he made Anakin look like the chosen one. And I love the pace and tone of the whole episode, much like the Mando episode that Rosario first gave us Ahsoka on. This was very evocative of Kurosawa, particularly the cold open. We finally got our Kanan name drop, and it was delivered at the time when it would have the most maximum importance for helping explain what was happening, and was just enough to make me, the Rebels fan, happy, and exposit for everyone just meeting Hera and Jason for the first time in the series. And we got Ahsoka the White. And if her costume change isn't semi-permanent for the rest of the season, I'll be shocked. And everything with the Purga was beautiful, and I loved watching them take off for an unknown reason. Region, cannot wait for next week. I love this. Ditto to say.
Yeah, cosign, right? Cosign. It's just so good. One like last thing I just want to say before we part ways, and I like even lose the thought, is like I was thinking a lot about the way that Luke confronts Vader right at the end of Jedi, and the fact that he's like, no, father, I won't fight you. And that's about Anakin, right? Luke is an aggressive young man who wants to leave home and go be an adventurer. He wants to be a star pilot. He's like so willing to run and fight. And Ahsoka's story is the inverse of that, right? Ahsoka is this child who goes to train as a Jedi peacekeeper and is trained to be a soldier. And that's why it's this inverted lesson, right? And it really is just so powerful, and it's so resonant, and it was executed awesomely on every front. The performers were great, all of the effects were tremendous, and I think Drayson's got it spot on. This is really good Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, we could be here for another hour and a half just unpacking everything from this episode. It was just chock full here, and I will say longer definitely than the previous two episodes, but still only 50 minutes. Again, there are hour-long dramas that stretch things out more than this does. We have done a lot in not only this episode, but we also have a long way to go and a long time to go, as next time, assumingly, we're going to see Ahsoka meet up with Sabine, meet up with the baddies as well. Think it might be Thrawn time. Think it might be Ezra Bridger time. Even we shall see. But as far as that being the answer to where do we go from here, I mean, I kind of don't want to leave here as well. I just want to live in this moment. I want to be submerged in this water of episode five, because it brought me all of my favorite things that I love, not only about Star Wars in the form of like this Ahsoka Anakin relationship, and how deliciously complex the Anakin Skywalker story can be if handled correctly. And I think that's a bit of the relitigation of the prequel era through stuff like the Clone Wars, which gets to delve a bit more into his descent to the dark side to not make it all so sudden over the course of half a movie, coupled with, again, talking about some very grounded and relatable themes that aren't acknowledged just because of, I think, of more of the popcorn element of it all through a lot of these stories in this franchise, but really helps us get a headspace for the character as well, with just some ungodly imagery and visuals that are on par with, honestly, some of the most beautiful things I've seen in Star Wars. And one of my favorite television tropes in the Mind Palace. It really was, in my opinion, a perfect episode of television. It's going to be a really tough act to follow. But I think, to Rich's point very early on in this podcast, if anyone was ever in doubt about the solidity of Ahsoka, if you felt like things were cracking, like the walkway that Anakin sent her hurtling down, in my opinion, it is more sturdy than ever. That this show knows what it is, and it is doing it with aplomb. And hopefully we all did it with aplomb, trying to talk through this very weighty episode. Of course, we are always receptive to more feedback, your interpretation as to what you think the world between worlds is. What does Anakin represent? What was the lesson? You can always write to us, StarWars@PostShowRecaps.com. If you're a patron of Post Show Recaps, you can write it on Discord. Send us a voicemail if you want to, speakpipes.com/PSRStarWarsHolo. And of course, you can reach out to us on social media, our handles of which will be talked about in this next segment, plugging away. Rich, you mentioned one voluminous show that you are covering here on Post Show Recaps, but what do you have going on in general?
Oh, so much stuff. So I'm at DM Philly on Twitter. My DMs are open if you want to hit me up. You can catch me streaming D&D with Mike sometimes over at twitch.tv/DM Philly. We're talking about the Wheel of Time, Mike. Season 2 is coming strong. I'm delighted. We're doing a bunch of podcasts. Season 2 of Foundation is wrapping up. We're about to talk about the finale. And that has been just a straight incline across Season 2. It's turned into a very extraordinary show. I'm talking about The Winter King, a new Arthurian retelling over on MGM Plus. It's pretty gritty and grounded and real and heavy, and Grace and Ariel and myself are tackling a bunch of time travel movies. We just wrapped talking about Predestination and announced our next project, which I guess I will announce here. We're going to bring some shows out of the dark. We're going to be talking about Tales from the Loop, Mike, a role-playing game that I played with you once, a bit of a prestige series that's on Amazon Prime and has not been viewed by a lot of eyes, unfortunately, but I think it's a really well-crafted show. So we're going to spend the next few weeks talking about that, but I am certainly keeping busy.
Well, Fitzy, much like Ahsoka is hopping between realities, you hop from movie every week to week on the Movie Ladder podcast. What do you have going on this week?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Ladder Movie or at Fitzy Brendan. We just got done last night recording our episode on the Pixar film Ratatouille with the great Shut Up Tim. We dropped that last night. There was a couple of mentions of Mike Bloom on that podcast.
Yeah, considering that, yes, I have lived a life for the past, 16 years as the live-action doppelganger. Talk about, I suppose I am the Hayden Christensen to the Matt Lanter that is Linguini from Ratatouille.
Well, also, you know, Shut Up Tim can't keep your name out of his mouth. So
I love him.
He's the best. We adore Tim. So, yeah, check us out every week. We have a lot of fun over there, Zach and myself, over at the Movie Ladder podcast. I think it's a little over 2 hours, but we had a really great time with Tim talking about Ratatouille. So
yeah, also go. Something you can watch on Disney Plus while you're waiting for the next episode of Ahsoka. You can follow me at a Mike Bloom type. Josh and I continue to be on our BSG BS talking the first part of the two-part finale of season one. Set my heart aflutter in many ways. If you know, you know. I gave my reactions live in the moment on that podcast. And in addition, though, I have been up to my neck, much like Ahsoka was finding herself submerged. I am very much submerged, last gasp style, in Survivor content. At the time this is coming out, there should be one more preview podcast with Rob Cesternino talking through my final 6 preseason interviews with the contestants of Survivor 45. I'm putting them out 2 at a time on Parade.com as well. Also have a really nice crew piece about the production aspect of Survivor 45. Coming out next week as well, that I can talk about a bit more as we get into episode 6. You can follow everything I'm doing, including my cameo, at a Mike Bloom type. And so we look ahead to episode 6, which is titled The Return of the Jedi conventionally. And she may not be a Jedi in her own right, but we'll certainly see the return of Sabine Wren.
Did not know that, and now I'm nervous.
No. I was going to say, episode 6 is not called Return of the Jedi.
Whoa. You just freaked me and Brendan out.
No, episode 6
was called Return of the Jedi. I was
like, wait, how confusing would that be for Disney to be like, episode 6, Return of the Jedi? They're like, wait, is it just Return of the Jedi, or is it the other Return of the Jedi?
Which Jedi is it? Which of the 116 survivors are we getting? I was right there with you, Brendan. I was freaking out in real time.
Well, we'll see. Maybe keep those jaws on the floor, because we might have some more surprises next week. Again, Ezra Bridger and finally Mads Mikkelsen's Grand Admiral Thrawn, or Lars Mikkelsen's, I should say, might be able to finally grace our screens as we travel to parts unknown and finally see what the hell is existing over in this mysterious galaxy. But we are going to bid adieu right now. Jump into hyperspace, up a Purgil's butt, as Fitzy put so eloquently. Thank you all so much for listening. This has been such a fun show to cover so far. Of course, we do miss LaTanya. Hope to have her back soon. But for right now, we are riding pretty. Thank you all so much for listening. Until next week, may the Force be with you.
A long time to go. A long time to go. A long time to go.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.